Good morning. Good to see you. Good to be here. I know we have several who are out, several on our prayer list. Please continue to pray for these individuals. I want to say a special thank you to all your prayers and thoughts about Homer and his recovery. He is home, as Van mentioned. We're so thankful. We think in part that your prayers help in that, definitely, as we offer those up to God. So thank you. Good to see Miss Evelyn back and her as she recovers. And we know we have several others. Let's please continue to pray for Miss Mary. She has surgery coming up and all the others that we're thinking about. This morning, I want us to consider a little fruit produce. And what are we producing with our lips? My boys love to read. Micah especially loves books. And so every night before he goes to bed, as I know many of you do, we sit down and we have to read some books or he's not going to be very happy. One of the books that we, I'm not even sure where we got this at. I think somebody gave it to us. But it's called Lauren and Her Leaky Pail, and it is by far at least one of my favorite books that we read together. And I want to just briefly tell you about it. I'm not going to read it to you, although I could probably quote it. But it is a precious story about a young lady named Lauren who has a great desire to win a gardening contest. And she has some difficulties. Number one, she ends up with not the best vegetable to grow. She ends up with Brussels sprouts. Now, some of you like Brussels sprouts. Ooh, gross. Not my favorite. But she says, you know what? I'm going to do the best I can. And then she goes to find a watering pail. And she's been helping the other younger kids with their seeds and things. And by the time she gets to the shed to pick out a watering pail, there's only one left. And it's an old rusty thing with holes in the bottom. That's all she's got. So she picks up her watering pail. She heads to the garden. She plants her seeds. And then she goes to the lake to fill her pail. Now, she doesn't go the way the other kids do. She goes the long, windy path because she enjoys the walk. She gets down there. She puts the water in the pail. She brings it back. She begins to water her seeds. And as you might imagine, with her splashing and sloshing, you ever seen a kid carry a bucket? You know this. She's only got a little bit of water in there. But you know what? It's my pail, it's my walk, we'll just have to make more trips. And so she continues to do this. And along the way, her friends try to help her out. One friend tries to put honey on the bucket, thinking that's going to work. It didn't work. Another friend puts Super Beluga chewing gum. Y'all remember Super Beluga? It doesn't help. Another tries masking tape. Now, how many of us as men have tried to use masking tape on everything to try to fix leaks and whatever else? It doesn't work. But she continues on. And one day, as all of us sometimes do, she got frustrated. Her plants were not growing. She wasn't seeing any yield from all her labor. So she gets upset and she runs home. And I love what her mom says to her. She quotes 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 6. Where Paul says, I planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. Lauren had done her hard work. She had done what she needed to do. She planted the seed. She gave it water. And now she had to wait on God. So she goes on with the rest. She goes back and she tries to help the other kids. She doesn't worry as much about her vegetables. Day of the contest comes up, and Somebody yells at her, "Lauren, look, look, see what you have done." Uh-oh, what has she done? She goes back up there and she looks down the path, and what sprung up all along the path on either side were beautiful flowers, wild flowers. And of course, she wins the contest. But I love what it says at the end. You know, God's given us tasks to do. There are things that we work hard at, we labor toward. We may not in the moment see what God means for us or what He's trying to produce in our lives. But if we will allow God to have His complete work in our lives, He can produce great things. And so I want to think about, you know, one of the areas of our lives where we can produce the most fruit or cause the most harm is the words we speak. Our words are powerful tools that can either be used for God or can be used another way. You think about the power of words. I think about Genesis chapter 3. In Genesis chapter 3, the most, maybe one of the most pivotal points in the history of mankind, with the exception of Jesus Christ and His crucifixion, His death, burial, and resurrection, is what happens in the Garden of Eden in Genesis chapter 3. When Satan comes clothed in the skin of a serpent, and he begins to talk to Eve. And he's tempting her. And you remember there as he talks to her, he just changes one word. When he says, he opens her eyes to the fruits of the garden and he points out that one in the midst, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And she says, "We can't eat of that because in the day we do, we shall die." What was Satan's response? "You shall surely not die." The power of one word changed the history of mankind. Because Eve and Adam ate that word up, listened to Satan, and did what they should not have done. The power of one three-letter word. "You shall surely not die." Our words have great power. You notice Proverbs 15 and verse 4. Solomon in all of his wisdom wrote, "A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit." Our words have the power to give life or to take it away. Our words have the power to plant the seed of God's gospel in someone's heart, and it also has the power to tear someone apart. The power of our words. What kind of fruit are you producing in your life by the power of your words? You notice in Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 15, the Hebrews writer talking about our worship and the power our singing has in our worship. And he says, "Therefore, by Him, Christ, let us, you and me and all Christians, continually offer the sacrifice of praise to God, that is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to Him." The fruit of our lips. What kind of produce, what kind of fruit are you producing? Are you growing? What kind of fruit in your life is God going to be able to harvest in someone else's? In Matthew chapter 7, we find out that we are known by the fruit we produce. Jesus, using this illustration of growing, of farming, of producing, he says in verse 16, "You will," what? "Know them by their fruits." He repeats this in verse 20. He says, "Therefore, by their fruits," what? "You will know them." And then you go on a little bit later in Matthew 12. Beginning at verse 33, Jesus says, "Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For a tree is known what? By its fruit. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of what? The heart, the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say to you that for every idle word men speak, they will give an account of it in the day of judgment. Notice verse 37, for by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. You don't get good fruit from an unhealthy, sickly, sinful tree. When a plant starts to die, it doesn't produce good fruit. What are you treasuring up in your heart? What can men know about you by the words you speak? You will be known by the fruit your lips produce. Are you producing light or darkness? We are known by the fruit we produce. Number two, in this thought, we also understand that good fruit cannot be produced from an unhealthy tree. Notice what the Bible has to say about this. In James chapter 3, James says, in talking about the power of words, he talks about how that we can control a horse by its mouth. We can turn the whole body. A ship is controlled by a little rudder, not by the sails. Sails don't give necessary direction of a ship, but it is that little rudder. And he compares that rudder to our tongue. Our tongues will direct our lives. Much of our lives can either be harmed or bettered by the words we speak. And then he goes on in verse 5 to point out a forest fire. And we all remember Smokey the Bear telling us that a little fire can kindle a huge flame, and it is only you and I who can stop or prevent forest fires. Well, the fires in your life, sorry about that. Thank you, Sandy. So when we think about what kind of things are we doing in our lives, in the lives of others, by the words we speak? And I want you to notice, in verse 8 he says, but no man can tame the tongue. If we let our tongues go wild. We had a friend in Tennessee who we would often say when she'd start going, she needed a button. She needed a button for her husband to start to push, to say, stop. Stop, you went too far. Our tongues can get out of control sometimes. Some of us need a button sometimes, or somebody else to push to tell us it's time to be quiet. And then I want you to notice verse 10. It says, out of the same mouth proceed what? Blessings and cursings. My brethren, these things ought not be so. You ever feel like a hypocrite? I felt like a hypocrite before. Sometimes we're hypocritical. We talk about doing the right thing. We talk about doing good things. And then we find ourselves sometimes speaking or doing in a way that is not proper. As Christians, we need to remember verse 11. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? We are what we produce. And our words, the way we use our words, the way we talk to people, the way we talk about people, says a lot about who we are spiritually. In James 1:26, a little earlier, there we go. James wrote, if anyone among you thinks, and notice he uses the word thinks, he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, deceives his own heart. And notice the end of that. This one's religion is useless. I don't want to have a useless religion. I don't want to have a useless spiritual well-being. I want to be useful, and I want my religion to produce something wholesome and good. And so when we think about evil speaking, James points out that evil speaking should not be characteristic of Christians. Sometimes it is. And we need to make corrections, don't we? 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. Peter writes, finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tenderhearted, be courteous. Those are all the things we should be. Those are all the fruits we should be producing. But notice verse 9, not returning evil for evil, reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. What is characteristic of your life? What is characteristic of my life? What kind of fruit am I producing? Am I talking about others in a way I shouldn't? Am I gossiping? The Bible condemns gossiping, backbiting. Notice Proverbs 16:28, a perverse man sows strife. A whisperer separates the best of friends. You want to destroy your relationship, start talking about one another, and you'll destroy it. 2 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 20, Paul said, for I fear when I come. He's worried about the Corinthian brethren. He says, I am fearful of finding something. What is it? I shall not find you at such as I wish, that I shall be found by you as such as you do not wish. And then he goes on, he says, and he says, lest there be. These are the things I don't want to see. I'm worried I'm going to see it. Would he see it here? And he goes to this list. You notice he talks about selfish ambitions and then backbiting. How do we talk about one another? Do we build one another up, or are we tearing one another down? In 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 13, Paul warns about those who, he says, would go from house to house. Doing what? Being gossips and busybodies. Saying things which they ought not. How do we talk about one another? How do we talk about people? Do we say things that build others up, or are we just looking to tear down? James says in James chapter 4 and verse 11, do not speak evil of one another, brethren. And then in verse 12 he says, there's one lawgiver who is able to save and destroy. Who are you to judge another? We can be a judgmental people sometimes. We can look at someone else's life. We can look at how they're living, or how we perceive they're living. And man, we can get out and we can start breaking them down and tearing them down. James says, we can't do that. Do not speak evil of one another. Do not gossip. Gossiping is condemned. Also, what about the words we choose to say? Just the words we choose to say. Sometimes we ever get caught up using foul language. In Romans chapter 3, Paul is discussing sin. He's talking about sin in chapter 1. He talks about how the Gentiles you're sinners, brothers. Or you came out of sin. In chapter 2, he talks about, hey, Jewish brothers, you were sinners too. In chapter 3, he says, we're all sinners. Notice what he says in verse 13 about us as human beings. Their throat is an open tomb. With their tongues they have practiced deceit. The poison of asp or snakes is under their lips, whose mouth is full of what? Of cursing and bitterness. Paul, writing in Ephesians chapter 4, says, brothers, let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth. Let no corrupt word, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart what? Grace to the hearers. If we're using foul language, we're not imparting grace. We're not imparting a Christ-like attitude, a Christ-like being. He goes on to say that we need to let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and what? Evil speaking be put away from you. Have we put away evil speaking? In Colossians letter, he said it this way. He says in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 8, but now you yourselves are to put off what? All these, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. Put out the filthy language. We can't talk like the world talks. That includes the type of words we use. Are we using words that are wholesome, that build up the church, that build up Christianity, that build up Jesus Christ? If it's not a word that we think Jesus would use, why are we using it? Put away filthy language. Then he says in verse 9, do not lie to one another. And that seems like, Paul, I mean, well, you know that, right? But he had to say it for a reason. Lying is condemned. You know, our words can be used for lots of different purposes. One of them may be to lie, to get out of a situation, or to get something we want. But in Proverbs chapter 6, the proverb writer says in verse 16, these six things the Lord hates, and seven are an abomination to him. Now you notice in that list, what is right in the middle, or the second thing he mentions, I'm sorry, a proud look, a lying tongue. Verse 19, he also says, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among the brethren. Those are things God hates. In Proverbs 12:22, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. Are we an abomination to the Lord when we lie? Yes, we are. We're doing something that is an abomination to the Lord. Let us not lie, but speak truth. In that rhyme we learned early on in life, who's going to have their part in the lake of fire? A lot of despicable things there. But one of those, he says, Revelation 21:8, all liars. Is our life plagued with that kind of speech? Is our speech condemning us? Maybe we need to change the way we speak. We need to use wholesome words. Proverbs 16:24, pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul. He'll later say in Proverbs that Upright words, wholesome words are like medicine to the soul, even healing the bones. Jesus said in Matthew 5 and verse 9, blessed are the what? The peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Are we making peace among the brethren, among those even outside the church, by the way we talk? Paul said in Romans 10 and verse 15, how shall they preach unless they are sent? He's talking about the need to preach the gospel. The gospel needs desperately to be preached in this world. And he says, how shall they preach unless they are sent? That is, as it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who what? Preach the gospel of peace. Who bring glad tidings of good things. Does your speech bring glad tidings of good things? Do you talk about good things? Do you discuss with others good things? Do you speak in a wholesome, upright way? That kind of speech is commended by God, and it should be characteristic of the Christian. And then finally, we need to realize sometimes in bringing those glad tidings of good things, sometimes it takes a little while for that to ripen in the heart of another. Lisa and I are trying to, we're venturing into gardening this year. And we've got a lot of tomatoes, a lot of green tomatoes. And they've been green for a long time. I'm ready for those tomatoes to start to turn that red hue. They're still green. It's taken them a little while. Now, I know in the end it's going to pay off. It's going to be great to slice that big, ripe, juicy tomato and put it on a piece of bread and eat it. That's going to be good. But it takes a little while. It has to go its course. You take that tomato off a little early. A little sour. Who's ever, as a child, had your grandfather, your dad, or someone pick a green apple? Whew. And those little green apples. Oh, they're sour. Ugh. You let them ripen, and they get nice and sweet and pleasant to the taste. Sometimes fruit takes a while to ripen. Paul said to the Corinthians, he said, he's talking about, you know, they've divided themselves up into these different camps. You've got an Apollos camp, you've got a Paul camp, you've got a Peter camp or Cephas, and you got a Jesus camp. And he has to remind them in chapter, he begins in chapter 1, and he's still talking about it in chapter 3, and he says, I planted, verse 6, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. The harvest is up to God. It's not up to me. I do my part. I plant when I need to. I water when I need to. But I allow God to give the increase because you know what? It's all His. I'm just a laborer in His vineyard. He says in verse 7, so neither is he who plants anything, nor he who waters, but God who gives the increase. Then notice, now he who plants and he who waters are one, and each one will receive his own reward according to his own labor. We're all working together. Now how does this have anything to do with words? You know, we have people in our lives that we've been trying to preach the gospel to forever. People we want to see change their life. We want that stuff to happen now. Please happen now. Sometimes it takes a while. All you and I can do is plant and water. Allow God to do the harvesting. Allow God to do the growing. Maybe our spouse is not what we want them to be. Maybe over the years we've tried to hone them, to shape them. Maybe our spouses truly are doing things that they shouldn't do. All we can do is plant and water wholesome things by the way we talk, by the way we live. Maybe our children are not what they should be. Maybe they haven't been obedient like we hoped they would. We want them to be right now. Truth is, I don't have any control over it. All I can do is plant and water and allow God to give the increase. I'm going to come back to those two. I love 1 Peter chapter 3. Beginning at verse 1, and again, I've mentioned this recently, it's not the first part, wives being submissive to their own husbands. That's God's rule for marriage. But I love what he says afterwards. You know, there were some in the first century, as there are today, who live in marriages where one spouse is faithful and another isn't. That can be a very difficult situation for people. And it's interesting what Peter says here. He doesn't say, you know what, you need to get out of that. You need to move on. What he says is, he says that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. And then in verse 3 he says, don't let it be those outward things that you focus on, that you put all your attention into. But at verse 4 he says, rather let it be the hidden person of the heart with incorruptible beauty, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. When he says that they may be one without a word, he's talking about don't nag and beat your spouse up every day, telling them about how they're a sinner and they're going to hell if they don't obey. That happens sometimes. He's talking about be a Christian. Show them by the way you live. Show them by the way you respond to them, by the way you talk to them. And allow time to have its work. In Matthew 13, as Jesus gives the parable of the sower, one thing you notice in there is the sower's going about sowing the seed. He's not picking and choosing what ground to sow the seed on. You ever notice everything about that? Even though that rocky ground doesn't produce great fruit, he still sowed the seed there, didn't he? He still gave it a chance. In those thorny ground areas, he still sowed the seed there. Gave it a chance. He sowed the seed on the road, didn't he? That hard-packed soil, gave it a chance to grow. He didn't go out looking for good soil. He just did his part in sowing the seed. We can be a judge of people sometimes and say, well, you're not really deserving of hearing the truth. Reality is, we don't get to play that role about sowing the seed. We just sow the seed and we water it. But we allow God to give the increase. In John chapter 4 and verse 35, Jesus, after talking to the Samaritan woman, which many of us would have looked at and said, you know what, that woman, she's an adulteress, she's living with a man. I mean, look at her. She's a Samaritan. She don't deserve the gospel. Let me go somewhere else and spend my time and effort. Jesus took the time to sit down with that woman and he shared the gospel with her. And she responded. And then after that, in verse 35, he says, there are still 4 months and then comes the harvest. That's what typically happens, right? We harvest at a certain time every year. But he said, behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes. Look, not with the eyes of a human being, but look with the eyes of God. and look at the fields, for they are white. They are already white for the harvest. We sow the seed of the kingdom, and we water it, and we tend it, and we allow God to give the increase. Look at the fields ready for God to harvest. What kind of fruit are you producing in your life for God? Jesus said, you'll be known by the fruit you produce. Matthew chapter 7, Matthew chapter 12. What kind of fruit are you really producing in your life? Is it something God's proud of? Is it something God can use to harvest? Maybe today you look and you see a life that needs some changes in it. Maybe you're not producing the fruit you should. That doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to stay that way. You can make changes in your life. If you haven't become a child of God, you can become a child of God today, right now. If you're a Christian who just simply is not laboring as you should in the fields, maybe you need to repent. Maybe you need to ask for forgiveness. Whatever it is, please do so as together we stand and sing.